Welcome to the Buyer's Desk, your weekly resource for all things natural food retail.
This season, we're shaking things up with shorter weekly episodes to fit your busy schedule.
Each month, we dive into SPINS data, explore trends with industry leaders, spotlight emerging brands, and share actionable strategies to help you thrive.
Get ready to explore the world of natural food retail.
My name is Ruth Ann Atkinson. I am the Growth Operations Manager at Infra, and I have been here for 8 years.
What would you tell an independent retailer who is considering applying for Infra?
You'll probably be surprised by how many benefits Infra actually offers. Most people who have heard of us have heard about our pricing and probably our promotions program, and those are incredible. But there is so much more available to members, from discounts on overhead costs like equipment, shelving, and credit card processing, to plug-and-play marketing resources, to tons of events and educational opportunities. Infra is here to make your life a little easier wherever we can. And truly, one of the most valuable parts of membership is the community. Having access to the collective knowledge and experience of hundreds of other retailers like you can do wonders for your business. So I would want them to know that Infra really is a holistic support organization, and we exist to help you succeed in all aspects of your business, not just pricing and promotions. How have you seen Infra change over the years? When I was hired over 8 years ago, Infra was very much still in scrappy startup mode. Every staff member wore at least a dozen hats. We were operating on a shoestring budget. There was a sense that we didn't quite know if this big experiment would work out in the end. There were only about 30 of us, but we were all very passionate about the mission and deeply invested in making it work. In the past few years, I'd say Infra has really come into itself. It's been exciting to see how we've grown and matured, improving both our internal operations and our ability to deliver value to our members. Infra is now able to take on bigger, more ambitious projects, to negotiate better deals for our members, and to make space for our staff to do cool stuff, like this podcast. But most importantly, we are all still passionate about Infra's mission and still deeply invested in making it work. Infra has grown and changed, but we haven't lost sight of why we exist. What do you think the future holds for independent retailers? Truthfully, I think retailers will be facing a pretty tough market in the future. Increased consolidation, uncertain economic conditions, supply chain disruptions, and a technology landscape that is advancing at lightning speed. But grocery has never been an industry for the weak at heart, and I wholeheartedly believe that these challenges are also the independent retailer's biggest opportunities. Indies are typically more adaptable, more resourceful, more in tune with their customers, and more supported by their communities than much of their competition. Like, nobody loves Walmart, but people do love their neighborhood grocer. I talk to retailers every day, and I've never met a more resilient group of people. If indies can balance implementing changes and new ideas to meet these upcoming challenges while leaning into what traditionally makes them special, I have no doubt that they will come out on top.
Hey, folks, and welcome to the Buyer's Desk and Infra podcast. I am Chris Sorensen, your host for today's episode. This month is Organic Month, and what better topic to dig into than organic integrity? What it means, why it matters, and how we ensure accountability at every level of the food system. To help us unpack this, I'm joined by Max Goldberg, the founder and publisher of Organic Insider. Max is one of the leading voices in the organic industry, and he's even been called an organic sensation by the New York Times. He's a watchdog, a truth teller, and someone unafraid to speak up when standards are being compromised. His weekly reports and insights have become essential reading for natural food retailers, brands, certifiers, farmers, and advocates all across the country. I've followed Max's work for years, and I'm especially excited to talk to him right now with so much on the line. The work Max is doing reminds me how much vigilance and transparency it really does take to keep the spirit of organic alive. Well, Max, thanks for joining me on the Buyer's Desk today.
Hey, Chris, it's great to be with you, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like, seeing all of your work throughout the years, reading yourself. You know, I just had a new employee start that's not from the industry. And one of the first things I I forwarded her Organic Insider and said, this is what you need to start reading to understand what we do here. So I just want to let you know that it's something we use, you know, and to stay in touch with what's going on in the industry.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's, you know, it's a labor of love, and this organic is not just something I do. I mean, this is my life. So we'll get into it, but it's protecting organic integrity is everything.
Well, yeah, I think let's dive right into that, because I think it's good for listeners who maybe, you know, even know your work or maybe not as familiar to know what drew you into this movement and how did that journey getting into this, you know, evolve into creating Organic Insider and doing what you do and providing, you know, a free resource. Obviously, you want people to support you, but, you know, no paywalls to start.
Exactly. So I first got into organic, you know, I found organic really, even though I worked in a natural food retail store in the 1980s in the suburbs of Boston, I didn't really understand what was going on. And no one, for whatever reason, the light bulb didn't go off then. I think I was focused on other things. I was in high school. But really, so in 2001 was really when I found organic. And the woman I was dating at the time was visiting her naturopath in New Mexico. And I tagged along and was hanging out. And when they were done, for some reason, she had all these bottles. And I just asked her, so what's the story with this organic food thing? What is it? And she explained it to me. And I'm like, well, don't we need all the chemicals to kill all the bugs? And she's like, no, we don't. And she started explaining to me all about the pesticides and the GMOs. And I went back to New York City where I was living at the time and started doing research. And basically, like overnight, I switched to close to 100% organic and have been that way ever since. Now, there was not a lot of organic back in New York City back then. So I did what I could. And then several years later, blogging became popular. Twitter had just launched. And I started an organic food blog called Living Maxwell. This was the end of 2009, beginning of 2010. And I remember at the time I was living in Boston and someone said, oh yeah, there's this big show going on here. And it was Natural Products Expo East. And I got the woman's name who ran the press room. I got her name and cell phone number. And I called her up. I told her who I was. I said, I don't have business cards. I don't have a website. I have nothing, but can I come? I'm launching this blog. And she said, sure, come in. And that was kind of the start of it. And then, so I launched this organic food blog, Living Maxwell, which is still up, but not very active. Organic Insider is where I put most of my energy. And about 9 years ago, I launched Organic Insider. I run the Organic Food Industry Group on LinkedIn, which has about 50,000 members right now. Anyone can join. And what LinkedIn used to allow you to do is to send out a weekly email to the group. And they had since stopped that. So I used to send out a weekly email and with a few links and just a few sentences. And then I would have meetups at Expo West. And the first year we had, you know, 5 people. And then we had, you know, 13. And then we had, you know, 25. And I think the biggest was about 90 people. And we don't do the meetups anymore because everyone is so overscheduled at Expo West. But what I decided was I wanted to take what I had, even though the group still remains, I wanted to take what I was doing on LinkedIn and take it off and create a standalone product. Because what I realized was that when I would speak to all these CEOs, and this was, you know, whatever, 29 years ago, so say 2016, so many of them did not know what glyphosate was. They did not know what was going on politically. They wanted to know, they were curious, but they were just so busy running their business. And so I said, okay, if I can create a newsletter and they actually spend the time 5 to 10 minutes a week to read it, I'll do all the curation. I'll do all the stories. They just have to read it and they can have a very good idea of what's going on in the industry. And so now we're, I guess, coming up on the 9th year. And that's Organic Insider.
That's awesome. And I think that's the one thing that you guys do really well is you take what's going on in the industry. You know, I see that you're always going out to shows and recapping shows. You're talking to retailers, you're talking to brands. And you bring in the political aspect of like, how does this all kind of come together? So you like aggregate, I think, a lot of the different viewpoints within the industry to provide a unique perspective, which I think is really great for all of the readers, right?
Well, thank you. Yeah, what I try to do is try to do a mix of everything. So if it were up to me, I write about politics and organic every single week. But I know that that's people want more than that. And I know that that will tire people out. So I really try to provide a mix of trends and business issues and regulatory matters and, you name it, so trade shows. So I really try to have a mix of everything, because all parts of this are important to organic. It's not just about the politics. Politics is a component of it, but the business side of organic and the retailing side of organic. And so it's everything. So I try to provide, something if I were reading, what I would be interested in. So a mix of really everything.
Yeah, I think that's good to have some diversity in that, because you can capture different readers in that way. One thing, just thinking about all of this, one of the things that I've noticed too, when you approach these things, is you approach some of the topics as well that it can be more controversial, or that, even talking about, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones recently that I've read. I mean, even when we got into like the precision fermentation, like things like that, you've covered things like that. What is it that draws you to go into these controversial topics and really dive into, what's going on and the different perspectives from those?
For me, it's about, at the end of the day, I'm an organic consumer. And that is, for me, really what I think about a lot is I want standards protected, because at the end of the day, I'm an organic consumer. And I also have the viewpoint of, I really want the small organic farmers, their voice represented, because I feel like their voices are incredibly marginalized. And without them, there would be no organic food industry. I mean, these were the pioneers who started it and whatever. Elliot Coleman, the most famous organic farmer in the country, who started organic farming in the 1960s, and he's a reader of mine. And, so there are a lot of these very well-known, very acclaimed small organic farmers who read my work. And it's also the biggest brands read my work. But at the end of the day, I'm an organic consumer, and I want this industry protected, because I want to be eating the best organic food possible.
I love that. That's a great answer and a good segue into talking about, you told me it was that last week you had just returned from the Rodale Institute.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know if you could give me a quick recap on that experience, what it was like to be there. But I also want to know, your perspective on where do you think maybe we're at most risk of losing integrity in the organic system right now?
Well, for anyone whether you're in the industry or not in the industry, making a visit to Rodale Institute in Pennsylvania is really a must, because this is where the organic food movement was started in the 1940s, J.I. Rodale. So at Rodale Institute has a 330-acre working research farm in Pennsylvania. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours outside of Philadelphia, New York. It's the mecca for organic. So it is the birthplace of organic. It is an incredibly inspiring place. And this is where it all began. So when we talk about where organic integrity is threatened, I think there's a few areas. One is something I talk about a lot is hydroponics in organic. And this is something of real relevance to retailers too. Hydroponics in organic, that means no soil, growing soilless fruits and vegetables in plastic buckets of water or containers of water. This is a complete and utter violation of the Organic Foods Production Act of 1990, as ratified by Congress. Section 6513 of the Organic Foods Production Act says that farmers must have a management plan that fosters soil fertility. Yet growing hydroponic tomatoes, for example, that uses no soil is a complete and utter violation of the law. And yet it's being allowed. We're the only country in the world that allows hydroponically grown fruits and vegetables that's allowed in organic. They don't allow it in the EU anywhere. So this is a serious issue of organic integrity. Factory farms, many certifiers are turning a blind eye to factory farms. And that's why the Cornucopia Institute has come out with their, or has all these scorecards, because many consumers think as long as it's got the organic seal, oh, it doesn't matter. I can buy organic milk as long as it's got the organic seal. That's all that matters. No, unfortunately, that's not the case because production methods vary from producer to producer, and not all organic certifiers are enforcing the rules. Many of them are, particularly the biggest ones, are allowing factory farms, and the USDA is not doing anything about it. And so you got hydroponics, you got factory farms, and another big issue is fraudulent imported organic grains. And that is a very big issue. The New York Washington Post did a huge investigation in 2017 about it. So those are a few of the biggest issues that we have in terms of organic integrity right now. And so one of the things that one of INFRA's members is Jimbo's. Now, what does Jimbo's do? Jimbo's will label fruits and vegetables that are grown hydroponically. They will say, hydroponically grown, even though that is not required by the USDA. And Jimbo's believes in transparency. And I believe that every retailer should be doing that. Every retailer should be educating themselves and educating their consumers or informing their consumers about what is grown in the soil and what is grown hydroponically, because organic is about the soil, period. And consumers need to know, and if they know, they will create more noise and galvanize more support to get the USDA to get rid of hydroponics and organic.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think transparency is the key. And I think that's something that runs through your reporting as well, as that level of transparency. And so one thing you mentioned too with like Jimbo's, being able to take something and make it more transparent. What are some other things that maybe you think independent retailers can do or that you've seen, and how can they navigate some of the nuance with these issues talking to shoppers? Yeah, there's something like putting it on the sign, but I think that's one of the biggest things that we have with organic, right? There is integrity within the certification. There's the certifiers that let this stuff slide, and it'll gets the consumer to the point where they don't trust the organic seal. And so what role do you see retailers playing in that, communicating that level of nuance? That we still trust the seal, but here's the other things that we can communicate.
Well, I think retailers have a critical role in this. And I think what I really want to point out here is we've talked about some of the challenges that organic is facing with integrity, but there are two initiatives that retailers really should jump on. These are the two add-on labels in organic that are really helping to restore the integrity. One is called the Real Organic Project, and the other one is called Regenerative Organic Certified. These are add-on labels that sit, quote-unquote, on top of the USDA Organic. USDA Organic is the baseline. You have to have USDA Organic certification to get either one of these two add-on labels. So what are these labels? Real Organic Project was started primarily by a handful of small soil-grown family farmers in New England, and it has grown to nationwide, and no hydroponics, no factory farms. So they actually go out and certify farms for free. It costs the farms nothing. So that's one add-on label. The other add-on label, which has gained more traction in the marketplace with consumers, is Regenerative Organic Certified. This was started by Dr. Bronner's Patagonia and Rodale Institute. And so they have three pillars. It's soil health, worker fairness, and animal welfare. And this label is much more ubiquitous in the supermarkets, still not ubiquitous, but you can find it much more than Real Organic Project. And so I think retailers, this is something that should give them a real sense of hope and encouragement that this is something that they can really grab onto and look to source more of these products. So from a retailer perspective, these two add-on labels are something that is a real area of interest. And I know that, for example, ROC products are growing tremendously in the marketplace. And I think these are two very, very bright and promising areas for the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I completely agree. We've had representatives from both organizations on the show, from Real Organic Project, and knowing that that is, you know, primarily produce. But yeah, even a lot of the farmers that are Real Organic Project certified don't necessarily have it on their packaging as well, which is another challenge to get that through to the consumer. But I completely agree with you. It's, you know, as much as the organic, you know, there is still a level of integrity in USDA organic. I think it is the things that, you know, the loopholes and the other things that are happening by having these add-ons are, one, hard to convey to the consumer why they're needed. But to the consumers that are, you know, concerned about integrity, it is that extra layer of transparency and things to help provide that assurance with shoppers that they're getting what they're getting. So us as organic eaters know that we're getting what we actually think we're getting. So Max, one thing you mentioned is retailers really do have a lot to play in this. I want to know where, you know, carrying products like this is definitely one. Where do you see as independent retailers can hold the organic movement accountable in a proactive way? Do you see if in the work that you do, talking to all different parties, like what are other things that, you know, speaking to these independent retailers out there listening, what are things they can do besides just carrying the products to help with the accountability with organic integrity?
Well, the other thing that they could do, and there's a nonprofit group called Organic Eye, which is one of the preeminent watchdog organizations. And what they have done is they've come out with a list of certifiers who are following the letter and the spirit of the law, and those that who are not. So retailers can go to Organic Eye, it's on their website, and they can see the certifiers who are doing it. And they can put pressure on brands to switch to the more reputable certifiers. So that is something else that they can do.
That's great. That is one thing I haven't looked into. So that is something I am going to do a little bit more research on. And I think that's the one thing that I like about you, Max, that when you send your weekly newsletters out, is not only do you have your articles, not only do you also pass on the other great articles that people read, but it's resources like this that you make sure to infuse into your newsletters as well, so that people know where they can go to get the source of truth. I always appreciate you dropping something like that that I have yet to hear of.
Well, I appreciate it. This is kind of a complicated subject, but I think for retailers, it's the retailers are so important because they're speaking with the consumers. That's why for retailers to be educated about everything that's going on, I know there's a lot, and that's kind of what I try to do with my newsletter is say, here, read this 5 to 10 minutes every 2 weeks. That's when it comes out. If you do that, you know, you can really be up the curve in what's going on, because the retailers are speaking with the consumers and do influence the consumers. So, the retailers play a vital role.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. So one thing, Max, I want to go back to the publishing Organic Insider. You've been doing this, like you mentioned, about a decade now. And so you get to see a lot from a lot of different angles. What gives you hope that we can actually protect and evolve the organic movement in the right direction?
Well, you have to have hope. So, I mean, that's the bottom line is you have to be hopeful that things will move in a positive direction. And as I mentioned, I think those two add-on labels, Regenerative Organic Certified and Real Organic Project, are two of the most hopeful initiatives that we have. The other thing that I see happening is I see testing taking an increasingly important role in organic. And I don't think that's going to be driven by the USDA. I think that's going to be something outside of the USDA, but I see that taking on a much greater role, where the organic brands who do the testing, I think consumers are going to navigate towards them and will help all raise the bar for everyone else. There's a brand out there called Zego Foods, Z-E-G-O Foods, and it's a certified organic brand, and there's no one who is doing more testing than Colleen at Zego Foods. And she's going to test for 400 plus chemicals in every single product she sells. So I think that's where things are moving. And so when people see that, they're going to have more integrity. And I think more and more organic brands are doing this testing, because testing for glyphosate, I've been involved with the glyphosate residue-free certification from day one since they launched in the US. And I think that the testing and transparency is going to help the organic brands who embrace it really distinguish themselves within the sector. And I think other brands are not going to want to be left behind. So between the add-on labels, between the increased testing, and I think, you know, I'm encouraged that there are not all young people, because I think that's an area we have to address in the US, but I see more and more young people who are beginning to understand the importance of organic, and I'm seeing more involvement from them as well.
Yeah, I think that's great. And what I've even read, and some of this you might have even touched on this, is that as much as the younger people are getting involved, they're also questioning where all the loopholes and the gaps are and questioning the integrity as well. And I think that's what we need discerning people to question the integrity and to help close these loopholes and provide that extra layer of transparency that we need going into, you know, the next generation. So yeah, the younger folks are giving me hope.
But yeah, we still have a lot of work to do with them. And if you saw in my recent fancy food recap, what one of the Gen Z trend spotters said was a very sobering news, but there are people, there are young people that I meet that are very into it. And I think if we can galvanize them, and I know there's several initiatives being discussed behind the scenes. So look, there's a lot to be discouraged about, but we can either be discouraged or we can be hopeful. And I choose to be hopeful.
Well, I love that, because then that comes through in your work too. So you are inspiring a lot of us out here. You know, we're all fighting the good fight in our different ways, right? But I appreciate the work that you are doing. So Max, before we finish up here, what maybe didn't we cover today, or what do you want to say to natural independent retailers that maybe you haven't had a chance to say yet?
Well, I just appreciate what the independent retailers bring, because I think this, just like this movement was started by small organic farmers, the movement was also started by the small independent retailers. I worked at one in outside of Boston in the 1980s, and I love going to my independent retailers in Boston, particularly the one out in West Concord, Deborah's, which I believe is a member of yours.
Oh, yeah.
The independent retailers play a critical role, and having their involvement and education and, you know, activism, particularly on the activism side, is really important. And I know many, many people, whether it's Mark Squire at Good Earth, or, you know, there's many of them out there, play just an essential role in this industry. And I just want to say that I am grateful for all these independent retailers because of the important role that they play in the industry.
I appreciate that. And I'm sure, you know, Mark and Adam over at Deborah's will appreciate the call out too. So Max, if someone is not getting Organic Insider, how can people get in touch with you? How can they get the newsletter? How can we support you in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, they can go to organicinsider.com. I have a free freemium model, so it's free to anyone. So it used to be behind a paywall. Then I said, I want anyone who wants to get this information, they should get it. If people want to support my work, I would be incredibly grateful. There is a premium membership, and you get video recaps, and you get a monthly community call. And then there's other things that I offer. This is 100% ad free. There's no advertising. I get approached all the time. People want to advertise. And I say no, because I want to keep my editorial independence. It's supported by individuals and brands that want to support the work. And so if people want to support the work, I would be incredibly grateful. And I do this because maintaining the organic integrity and supporting and protecting our industry is of tremendous importance, because of how important organic is to me and to everyone listening to this podcast.
Excellent. Well, that's a great way to end this off. It's organic integrity is very important. It's what we come in to do every day to do our job. So thanks again, Max, for being here today, talking about your story, making that connection for all of us on where to go to find out the information on keeping organic with the most integrity as possible and bringing people the information that is really needed to keep us informed and making great decisions within our industry. So thanks again. I appreciate all your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chris. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Hi, I'm Sarah Fulton Kerbling, retail marketing strategist at Infra, and I've been here for going on 5 years. What do you think is the most unique thing about Infra as a workplace? For me, the thing that sets Infra apart is that every day is different. We support independent retailers across the country and across the huge spectrum, from truly mom and pop operations to stores that have multiple locations spanning across different states. And each retailer is positioned to serve their community, and Infra is set up to support these retailers, who are the lifeblood of their communities in whatever way serves them best. I work most closely with the marketing at the store level, and for some members, that means helping set up systems for making sure promotional items are signed at the shelf when implementing Infra deals for the first time. For other stores, that might be strategizing how to really connect with their community through events or even planning how to create commercials for streaming services to promote their business. No 2 days are the same for our retailers and for me working at Infra, which I love. How did you know the natural foods industry was right for you? I always knew that I wanted to work in food. In my 20s, I went to culinary school and then had your kind of traditional jobs of barista and working in food service. Then I got into school food and agriculture with Food Corps, an AmeriCorps service opportunity that connects kids to healthy food. I was working in institutional food and school gardens and teaching nutrition and science to rural middle school kids. And then after my term of service was over, I knew I wanted to still work in the industry and getting people connected to healthy food. I got a job at a natural and organic grocery store, first in wellness and then back in healthy eating. And I wanted to make sure people had access to what they needed to be healthy, whether that was through supplements or fresh, affordable food. Teaching people how to cook and helping them find the supplements and natural ways to reach their health and wellness goals was the start of my career in the natural foods industry. And through community engagement and educational events, I found my way to marketing, and I've been doing it in the industry for over 15 years. What do you think the future holds for independent retailers? Independent retailers are more agile and nimble than the rest of the larger consolidated grocery industry. And while our industry has razor-thin margins, I believe that if independent retailers can share their story, connect to their community, and continue sourcing the highest quality products that your community is looking for, consumers are going to continue to support you. During the 2025 Infra Annual Conference, I moderated a panel on next generation shoppers, looking at the behaviors and preferences with Gen Z consumers. My main takeaway from that session was that younger shoppers are incredibly well-informed about the stories behind brands, from CPG companies to the retailer. They care deeply about environmental sustainability and community involvement, but they also focus on affordability and trends. If you communicate to these younger shoppers how your choices as a business reflect those categories, you'll capture more of their grocery spend and create lifetime natural industry shoppers.
As we wrap up this episode of The Buyer's Desk, we'd like to extend our heartfelt thanks to the incredible Infra staff, contributors, dedicated independent retailers, and visionary natural food brands and business partners that made this episode possible.
Stay tuned for more inspiring insights and stories in the world of natural food retail. Until next time, thank you for your support. Angela Bozo, co-host and administrator.
Chris Sorensen, co-host and producer.
Kim Rout, executive producer and segment contributor.
Jim Olson, Spin's segment manager.
Austin Hinkle, audio engineer.
Sarah Super, wellness strategist.
Madeline Ware, marketing writer, editor, and digital manager.
Haley Craig, audio engineer and segment contributor.
Raina Kittredge, segment contributor.
Bella Sislo, outreach manager and segment contributor.